This video is sponsored by Into the AM. Here's something I never thought I'd get excited about. Clothing. But Into the AM changed that. And right now, they have incredible deals that are far too good to skip. They're offering packs and bundles where you can save over $50 on premium everyday essentials, like tees, activewear, and basics you'll actually want to use. I've been rotating through my Into the AM pieces constantly because the fit and feel is simply amazing. They're comfortable enough to wear all day, and they hold up whether I'm working out or just going about my day. If you've been meaning to refresh your wardrobe with fresh essentials or unique graphic tees, this is your moment. Don't miss out. Click the link below to check out the packs, save over $50, and use code FANTASYFUTURE for 10% off. Thanks again to Into the AM for sponsoring this video. Caliban was a death world, not in the manner of some asteroid-blasted mining colony or radiation-soaked industrial wasteland, but in the truest sense, a world where death hunted the living with claws and fangs. Its forests stretched unbroken across continents, and within them prowled the great beasts, chaos-tainted megafauna from the Age of Strife. Some walked on two legs, others on four or six. Their hides were impervious to most weapons. Their claws cut through stone. They hunted with intelligence that exceeded animalistic instinct. These ambush predators learned from each encounter, adapted to human tactics, and grew stronger with each generation. Humanity could only hope to survive in their fortified settlements. Their stone walls were the only barrier against the forest's darkness. The planet's nobility maintained their ancient bloodlines within these fortress cities. They ruled through hereditary right, claiming descent from Caliban's first colonists. However, from this backwards aristocracy rose a new power, the Order. Where noble houses demanded fealty through ancestry, the Order accepted any warrior who proved their worth. Commoner and highborn knelt side by side. A peasant with skill at arms held equal rank with a noble's son. This meritocracy challenged Caliban's traditional hierarchies, but the Order's success against the great beasts silenced most opposition. It was into this world that the infant Primarch Lionel Johnson landed. The knightly orders spoke of a forest spirit that haunted the deepest woods during this period. Expeditions reported glimpses of a figure moving through the canopy, leaving nothing but a trail of slain great beasts. The duration of the Primarch's isolation remains disputed. Some accounts claim a standard century, others a mere decade. What can be stated with certainty is this: the child survived. Alone in a wilderness that devoured armored knights, the infant Primarch pushed back against the terrors of Caliban, and these formative years would define his character for millennia to come. When Knight Luther of the Order discovered him, the boy had no name and spoke no human language. His hair was long and matted. His skin bore scars from claw and fang. Luther named him Lionel Johnson, Lion, Son of the Forest. He would go on to introduce the lion to civilization and raise him as his son, becoming his mentor, his friend, and eventually his battle brother. The lion learned with unnatural speed. Within months, he surpassed Luther's skill with blade and bow. Within a year, he led his first campaign against the great beasts, and within 5 years, he commanded the Order. The Lion's approach to warfare differed from traditional knightly methods. Where other orders sought to contain the beasts and maintain equilibrium with the forest, the Lion wished to see them exterminated. The campaign lasted 3 decades. The great beasts died by their thousands. The forests fell silent, and within a generation, Caliban transformed from a monster-haunted wilderness into a mighty fortress world. Where once humanity cowered behind walls, settlements now expanded into cleared land. Alderuk rose as the supreme fortress of the Order. It was built on the Lion's vision of absolute victory through absolute ruthlessness. The world forest that had defined Caliban yielded before human expansion. This was only the beginning. The discovery of Caliban by the Emperor of Mankind marked the end of one era and the birth of another. Imperial starships descended upon Caliban in numbers that darkened the sky. The Emperor of Mankind had found his lost son. The Primarch and the Emperor spoke alone for 3 days, and when they emerged, the Lion had accepted his role as Gene Father of the First Legion. Caliban would join the Imperium and the Great Crusade. The industrialization that accompanied the arrival of the Imperium transformed Caliban. Massive tractors the size of fortress walls, chain blades that could fell ancient timber, industrial furnaces that consumed wood faster than it could be cut, descended from the fleet's cargo haulers. Dozens of kilometers of ancient forest were consumed every solar day. The timber fed shipyards and manufactoriums. Bare soil was left where sacred groves had stood for 10,000 years. The Calibanites had defined themselves against the forest for generations. The Lion himself had fought to destroy it, but the speed and scale of imperial exploitation differed from anything they could imagine. This was wholesale industrial extraction. The Calibanites had hunted in that forest. They had built their warrior culture against its dangers. They had lost family to its beasts and brothers to its darkness. The forest had been their enemy, but it had also been their forge. Joining the fold of the Imperium meant a complete uprooting of old ways. The First Legion arrived from Terra, bearing jet-black power armor and decorated with symbols of death. These Terran Astartes had fought through the Unification Wars. They had served as the Emperor's sword during the Solar System campaigns. They had earned a reputation as the Legion deployed when compliance was impossible and only extermination remained. They knelt before their Primarch with the iron discipline that had carried them through a century of warfare. Younger Calibanite warriors, those still capable of receiving the complete gene seed implantation, underwent the transformation. They entered the Apothecarian as humans and emerged as Astartes. Those who survived their ascendance bore the Lion's genetic legacy. Older veterans like Luther had passed the age threshold for full transformation. The biological changes required for Astartes' creation would not take in bodies past a certain developmental point. The apothecaries offered alternative augmentation, extensive surgery and biochemical enhancement that granted superhuman strength, but fell short of full Astartes capability. These warriors would be stronger than humans, faster than humans, more durable than humans. But they would forever be lesser than true space marines, a physiological distinction that created an innate hierarchy within the Legion. Luther accepted the augmentation. He gained strength beyond mortal limits, and yet he remained diminished compared to his adopted son. The Legion was renamed the Dark Angels after an ancient Calibanite myth. The Terran Hexagrammaton merged with the knightly traditions of the Order. Caliban itself transformed from a feudal wilderness into a world dedicated to recruitment and supply, feeding the First Legion as it deployed across the stars. The Lion took his seat of command aboard the Invincible Reason and joined the Great Crusade. Three years into the Crusade, the First Legion encountered the world called Sarosh. Initial surveys indicated a compliant human civilization, technologically advanced and politically centralized, the Saroshi government appeared accepting of imperial unity and the atheistic imperial truth. They hosted the Dark Angels delegation in their capital city and scheduled formal integration ceremonies. Beneath their bureaucratic facade, they worshipped entities they called the Melekim, warp spawn that promised power in exchange for devotion. The Saroshi viewed the Imperium's militant atheism as existential threat. They had spent centuries building their society around these entities. The thought of abandoning their faith for imperial doctrine was unthinkable. The compliance negotiations turned out to be a means of positioning the Dark Angels' leadership for assassination. A nucleonic device was concealed aboard a Saroshi diplomatic shuttle, big enough to vaporize everything within a 3-kilometer radius. Its intended target was the delegation chamber, where the Lion and his senior officers would witness the signing of compliance documentation. The Saroshi had calculated that decapitating the Legion's command would throw the invasion into chaos, buying time for reinforcements from other Melekim-worshipping worlds. Luther was responsible for the delegation's safety, and he was the one that discovered the weapon. He stood before the device for a span of heartbeats. In that moment, Luther could have triggered the alarm, but he hesitated. Librarian Zahariel Elzurius witnessed Luther standing over the active weapon. Zahariel raised the alarm and ejected the device into space. It detonated in orbit, and the Lion arrived in the shuttle bay within minutes. The Lion had sensed Luther's hesitation, and their bond of absolute trust was shattered. The Saroshi rebellion was utterly crushed within days. The civilian population that had supported the Melekim cult was eradicated. What remained of Sarosh after compliance was a broken world, its population reduced by 2/3, and its cities in ruins. In the aftermath, Luther was ordered to return to Caliban. He would take 500 veterans, both Terran and Calibanite, and oversee recruitment and training of new Space Marines. This was presented as a position of honor. The Dark Angels required a steady influx of recruits to maintain strength during the Crusade, and someone needed to manage the transformation of Caliban into a proper recruiting world. However, Luther perceived this responsibility as quiet exile. The relationship between mentor and student, already strained by the Lion's rapid ascension, fractured completely. For decades, Luther's garrison remained on Caliban while the First Legion earned glory across the galaxy. They trained recruits. They oversaw gene seed implantation. They administered tithes to the wider Imperium. They watched as Imperial machinery continued to clear Caliban's forests, transforming their sacred homeland into mines and refineries. Each day brought fresh tithes demanded by distant bureaucrats who knew nothing of Caliban's traditions. Each night brought the bitter feeling that they had been discarded, left to train recruits while their brothers earned laurels in the Emperor's name. The Terran legionnaires had expected to fight beside their Primarch across the stars. Instead, they administered a backwater world, training initiates and managing supply chains. The Calibanites had grown up hearing tales of the Order's glory. They had joined the Legion expecting to carry that tradition across the galaxy. Instead, they watched their homeworld transformed into a mining colony, while the Legion they should have been fighting with pursued the Crusade without them. Luther was a gifted orator. Before finding the Lion, he had been the Order's most respected knight, a warrior whose reputation was built on both martial skill and leadership. He spoke to the garrison about their abandonment, and his words found fertile ground. The Terran veterans, always separate from the Calibanites in culture and custom, blamed the locals for their exile. The younger Calibanite recruits, raised to venerate the Lion, watched their homeworld stripped, and wondered if their Primarch had forgotten them. In the vacuum of the Lion's absence, their resentment festered. The ruinous powers had extended their hands and reached the garrison on Caliban. How it reached them, whether through Luther's own ambition, providing an opening, or through deliberate corruption by Chaos agents, or through some combination of factors, remains mysterious. Rumors that the Emperor had abandoned Caliban, that Terra viewed Calibanites as inferior specimens, that the Lion's ruthlessness had turned against his own spread. Luther heeded these dark rumors. Whether through ambition, jealousy, genuine belief in the accusations against the Lion, or simple bitterness at being left behind, he turned from the Emperor's light, and he was not alone. The garrison, isolated and bitter, followed him into heresy. By the time news of the Horus heresy reached Caliban, Luther had been corrupted thoroughly. He did not immediately declare for Horus. The arch-traitor was distant, and Luther's grievances were personal. But he prepared his forces for the moment when the Lion would return. Alderuk's defenses were reinforced. Orbital platforms were repositioned. The garrison was prepared for when the Dark Angel's fleet would return. The Lion received no warning of Caliban's fall. Horus had dispatched him far from Terra, tasking the First Legion with containing Conrad Kurz and his Night Lords in the Aegis subsector. This strategic diversion kept the Dark Angels from reinforcing Terra's defense during the critical opening years of the heresy. The First Legion was preoccupied with the Thrama's crusade, and this war of terror pushed the Dark Angels to ever darker methods. At Poditus, a world the Night Lords had converted into a trap-laced maze, the Lion discovered the Tuchulcha engine. The device predated the Imperium by unknown millennia, possibly predating humanity itself. The Tuchulcha was one of a triumvirate of ancient machines that included the Ouroboros and a third unknown component. Together, these devices were said to possess power to reshape space and time itself. Individually, the Tuchulcha offered precise warp navigation, a capability that would allow the Legion to contain the evasive Night Lords. But its use required something the Emperor had explicitly forbidden. The Council of Nicaea had disbanded all legionary psychic programs. The Emperor himself had decreed that Space Marines would no longer employ sanctioned psychers. The edict had been absolute and issued in response to concerns about corruption and psychic excess. The Lion decided to violate that decree. The Tuchulcha required a psyker interface. Without librarians, the device was useless. With it, the Legion could end the Thrama's crusade and redeploy to more critical theaters. Chaplain Nemuel objected to this breach of the edict. The chaplains had been created specifically to ensure Legion adherence to Imperial doctrine. Nemuel stood before the assembled command staff and cited the edict's exact wording. He stated that violating the Emperor's decree, regardless of tactical advantage, was unacceptable, and he called for the Lion to reconsider. The Lion struck his head from his shoulders with a single blow. The punch caved Nemiel's helm and crushed his skull. The chaplain fell without a sound. The execution was immediate and without judgment. The Lion looked at the assembled officers and asked if anyone else wished to debate the matter. No one dared to speak. The Lion would break the Emperor's law to save the Emperor's realm. Using the Tuchulcha engine, the Dark Angels ambushed the Night Lord's fleet in the Sagualsa subsector. The engagement was brief and devastating. It shattered one quarter of Kurz's forces. Over 24 capital ships were lost. Hundreds of smaller vessels were crippled or fled into the warp. The Night Haunter himself was mortally wounded when his flagship was boarded. The Lion fought Kurz in a duel on the ship's bridge in a battle that lasted mere minutes. Both Primarchs were wounded, but Kurz fled before the Dark Angels could finish him. He would survive to plague the Imperium for years, but the Thrama's crusade ended in Dark Angels' victory. Following the ending of the Thrama's crusade, the unthinkable happened, and the Astronomicon was extinguished. The Astronomicon, the psychic beacon by which all Imperial vessels navigate the warp, is generated from Terra, and its extinguishment could mean only one thing. Terra had fallen. All evidence suggested the Emperor was dead and the Imperium decapitated. The Lion did not immediately race to Terra. With the Astronomicon extinguished, he had no reliable means of warp navigation to the throne world. A blind jump to Sol system could take months or years, assuming the fleet survived the journey at all. More critically, if Terra had already fallen, reaching it quickly served no strategic purpose. The Lion initiated what would later be classified as the Passage of Angels, a purge of traitor legion homeworlds. If the Emperor was dead and the heresy successful, the Lion would ensure the traitors had nowhere to return to. He would destroy their sanctuaries, annihilate their recruiting populations, and leave them as rootless as he now felt. Chemos burned. Barbarus choked on its own toxic ash. The Lion brought systematic destruction to half a dozen traitor homeworlds before the Astronomicon reignited. When it did, he finally turned toward Terra. When the Dark Angels fleet emerged in Sol system, the siege had already ended. The Emperor sat entombed upon the Golden Throne, and Gilliman had begun restructuring the shattered Imperium. The Lion's absence from the crucial battle would become a wound the First Legion would carry across the millennia, but that wound paled against what awaited at Caliban. The Dark Angels fleet returned to their homeworld expecting sanctuary. They had been fighting for 7 years without respite. The Legion had suffered incalculable losses. Ships needed repair. Warriors needed rest and reinforcement. Caliban was meant to be their home, but the garrison engaged the returning Legion on sight. The Lion watched from the bridge as his homeworld attempted to kill him. He demanded an explanation from Caliban's garrison. The response was a demand for his surrender. Luther declared the Lion a traitor to Caliban and to humanity. He claimed the Emperor had corrupted the Legion, and that Caliban alone remained pure. The Lion, confronting Luther's betrayal, ordered Caliban to be bombarded from orbit. If Caliban had chosen betrayal, Caliban would burn. The guns that had carried the Legion across the Great Crusade now turned on the planet that had birthed it. What remained of the forests after Imperial industrialization were turned to ash, and the planet's crust began to fracture. When the orbital bombardment ceased, Caliban's surface was nothing more than a burning wasteland, and Alderaak alone remained intact, protected by void shields. The Lion led the assault on the Enclave personally. Within the ruins of the Fortress Monastery, he found Luther. The Mentor had been elevated by the gifts of the ruinous powers, granted strength to match a Primarch's. The duel was apocalyptic. Fortress walls crumbled. Stone melted under the heat of their fury. Luther, empowered by entities beyond mortal comprehension, struck a psychic blow that mortally wounded the Lion. In that moment of triumph, the veil of chaos lifted. Luther saw what he had done. The realization broke him utterly. His repentance was immediate, absolute, and too late. The ruinous powers, enraged by their champion's failure, unleashed a massive warp storm. The already shattered planet tore itself apart. The traitors who had fought for Luther, the fallen angels, were consumed by the storm and cast across space and time by the malevolent currents of the warp. When the storm subsided, Caliban was no more. Only one fragment remained. The asteroid, later named as the Rock, built around the deepest dungeons of Alderuk. The Dark Angels' fleet salvaged what they could from the debris field. Luther was found in a cell beneath the rock. His mind had been shattered, and the lion had vanished. Luther's testimony, recorded before his sanity fractured completely, claimed the Watchers in the Dark had taken the lion. The chapter found no body. For 10,000 years, the lion's fate remained unknown to even the Supreme Grand Masters. In the aftermath of Caliban's destruction, the surviving loyalists faced a crisis that would define the next 10,000 years. The truth of Luther's rebellion threatened the Legion with total condemnation. The Inquisition would brand them excommunicate traitoris if they learned that half the First Legion had turned traitor. The chapter would be destroyed, its gene seed purged, its history erased. Everything the Lion had built would be destroyed. The senior officers gathered in what remained of Alderuk's command center. They debated for days. Some argued for truth. The Legion had nothing to be ashamed of. They had remained loyal. Luther's treason was his alone. Others argued for secrecy. The Imperium was fragile after the heresy. Another Legion turning traitor would destabilize it further. The vote was not unanimous, but it was decisive. The Inner Circle formed in those days. They destroyed their own records, staging a false plasma reactor overload aboard the Rock to explain the loss of data. When the second founding came, and the Legions were broken into smaller chapters, the Dark Angels ensured that their successor formations remained bound by the same terrible secret. The Angels of Absolution, the Angels of Redemption, the Angels of Vengeance, all became part of the Unforgiven, a distributed Legion hiding in plain sight, coordinated by protocols that the Codex Astartes never anticipated. The hunt for the fallen became their penance, their obsession, and their curse. Every captured fallen is taken to the Rock. Deep within its dungeons, interrogator chaplains inflict punishment that would break mortal men. The goal is repentance, the admission of sin, the cleansing of the soul. Some fallen do repent, and they die quickly for their confession. However, most refuse, and their torment is drawn out across decades as the chaplains seek to save their souls that no longer wish for salvation. The fallen are not a unified force. The warp storm scattered them across the vast reaches of space and time, and each emerged into a galaxy that had moved on without them. Some materialized mere months after Caliban's fall. Others appeared millennia later, having experienced the destruction as if it were yesterday. Time holds no meaning in the warp, and the fallen are living proof of that horrible truth. These chaos-tainted fallen became true heretic Astartes, leading pirate fleets and cultist armies, preaching the doctrines Luther had instilled in them during those final days. Some have risen to demonhood in the millennia since the fall, their souls so steeped in corruption that they ascended to become champions of the warp. Others established planetary empires, becoming tyrants who rule entire systems through fear and superhuman might. Some, freed from Luther's indoctrination and the influence of chaos, realize the magnitude of their betrayal. Disgusted by their own actions, they sought to disappear into the vast Imperium. On frontier worlds and in forgotten colonies, they integrated themselves into human society. Many became mercenaries, masterless warriors, selling their services to whatever cause would pay. Others sought atonement, protecting the weak and fighting against genuine threats to humanity, trying in their own way to make amends for sins they can never fully cleanse. Traitor or penitent, corrupted or seeking redemption, all fallen must be hunted. All must repent or die. There can be no exceptions, for even one fallen walking free represents the possibility that the truth will emerge and the chapter will be condemned. Of all the fallen, none is as hated or feared as the Cipher. He appears as a robed figure clad in dark armor shorn of all chapter livery. The armor itself is ancient, seemingly predating the heresy, suggesting it may be a relic from before the Emperor's arrival on Caliban. His features remain hidden beneath a deep hood. He rarely speaks. His voice, when heard, is measured and reveals nothing. He moves with the fluid grace of a master warrior, his reflexes exceeding even that of an Astartes. No one knows his true name. On ancient Caliban, the office of Lord Cipher was a position within the Order, a keeper of secrets and mysteries, a warrior tasked with maintaining traditions that predated the Order. The Lord Cipher was required to renounce their birth name upon assuming the role. The Inner Circle maintains competing theories regarding his identity. These theories have been debated for 10 millennia without resolution. Some point to Zahariel Elzurius. Zahariel was a powerful librarian who served under the Lion during the Great Crusade. He assumed the role of Lord Cipher during Caliban's final days, taking the position shortly before the Lion's return. Records indicate Zahariel fell to Chaos Corruption and became a sorcerer of considerable power. However, Cipher displays no psychic abilities whatsoever. He relies on mundane weapons and employs the help of renegade psychers when needed. Others argue for Corswin. Corswin was a champion of the Ninth Order and one of the Lion's most skilled warriors. He possessed unmatched martial excellence, fitting to Cipher's current profile. He was known for his skill with blade and pistol. His loyalty to the Lion was absolute, and his absence post-heresy has never been fully explained. A third theory suggests Cipher is not a single individual, but a rotating title. This theory assumes that the Cipher is a role that different fallen take across the millennia to serve some larger agenda. Cipher's war gear reveals much about his nature and capabilities. One bolt pistol and one plasma pistol of pre-imperial manufacture. They are relics from an age before the Emperor unified humanity. He also carries a knife of Necron origin. During the 13th Black Crusade, Cipher wielded the blade against forces of the Deceiver. The knife was lost to the warp in that engagement. Yet the weapon appears and disappears unpredictably. But the most significant weapon is the one he never uses, the sword strapped to his back. The blade remains sheathed across every recorded encounter. The Inner Circle has documented 47 engagements where Cipher was directly involved in combat. In 32 of those, he was surrounded by hostile forces. In 17, he was pushed to the brink of apparent defeat. In 4, he sustained wounds that would have killed an Astartes. Even so, he has never drawn the sword. This restraint transforms the weapon from mere armament into symbol and prophecy. The nature of this sword plagued the minds of the Inner Circle. The Lion's sword is known to be broken in that final battle with Luther. When the Lion returned, he wielded a different weapon of mysterious origin known as fealty. This leaves the original sword's fate uncertain, and some believe Cipher carries the broken blade, waiting for the moment it can be reforged or presented to the Emperor as proof of the Dark Angel's loyalty. Some think that it is Luther's blade. Luther wielded an ebon sword during the final duel, a weapon gifted to him by the ruinous powers. If Cipher carries the instrument of the Primarch's wounding, it could mean the ultimate act of blasphemy or penance. Perhaps he bears the weapon to seek judgment. Perhaps he intends to present it to the Lion himself as acknowledgement of guilt, A darker thought is that the blade is meant for the Emperor, not as a tool of assassination, but mercy. The Golden Throne consumes thousands of psykers daily to sustain the Emperor's fatally wounded body. Some believe the Emperor is transforming into something beyond human comprehension. A fifth chaos god, an entity of pure consumption that would eclipse even the ruinous powers. If this transformation completes, the consequences would be catastrophic. Cypher's mission may be to end the Emperor's physical existence before that transformation, releasing his soul from the throne's torment and preventing a catastrophe that would doom all life. This might suggest that Cypher serves a higher purpose, that he acts with the Emperor's own sanction, that the Master of Mankind would authorize his own mercy killing to prevent his transformation into something worse than chaos itself. Cypher operates within a paradox that has defined his 10,000-year existence. He is simultaneously destroyer and savior, traitor and loyalist, catalyst of ruin and agent of redemption. On Praxis, he infiltrated the Angels of Redemption and posed as a chapter serf. He personally trained feral warriors from the recruitment pools, teaching them techniques that increase survival rates during selection. By the time he was discovered, he had influenced an entire generation of recruits. He vanished before he could be apprehended. The recruits he trained served loyally for centuries. In the Agrippina sector, he appeared as a robed prophet calling himself the voice of the Emperor. He broadcast messages across planetary Vox networks that inspired both religious fervor and rebellion. His words carried such weight that entire worlds rose against corrupt governors. These uprisings toppled tyrants and freed oppressed populations. These same uprisings also destabilized imperial defenses, allowing chaos incursions to gain footholds. During a massive rebellion across the Veritas sector known as the Red Heresy, Cypher spent decades stirring unrest. He moved between rebel factions, providing tactical advice and inspiring resistance against Imperial authority. Then Cypher guided the Silver Skulls chapter to suppress the very uprising he had created. He provided intelligence on rebel strongholds. On Septia VII, he murdered Inquisitor Arnuldus and assumed his identity for 8 months. He used the Inquisitor's authority to misdirect planetary defenses during a Black Crusade assault. The Hive World fell within 3 weeks, and 7 billion humans died. In the Ophidian Gulf, the Black Templars captured Cypher during one of his prophetic campaigns. They held him aboard the battle barge Sigismund's Wrath while determining his fate. The Dark Angels discovered his capture and demanded his immediate release. The Black Templars refused, and the situation escalated into a naval standoff. 3 Dark Angels strike cruisers faced off against 2 Black Templars' battle barges. Other Imperial forces in the region observed 2 Loyalist chapters on the brink of fratricidal combat. Rather than allow the confrontation to escalate within view of non-Astartes forces, the Dark Angels withdrew. And through it all, Cypher continues to evade capture with an almost supernatural ability. Following his role in the liberation of Primarch Gilliman from stasis, Cypher was imprisoned within the Black Cells, the deepest dungeons of the Imperial Palace. The circumstances of his involvement with Gilliman's resurrection is not fully known, though it is clear he provided aid that proved essential to the Primarch's return. Gilliman ordered his imprisonment rather than execution. The returned Primarch recognized Cypher's value as a potential intelligence source, and possibly recognized that killing him might prevent the completion of some larger plan. For most prisoners, the Black Cells represent the end of existence. located beneath the Imperial Palace, in chambers that predate the unification of Terra. These cells are designed to hold the most dangerous individuals in the Imperium. Miraculously, Cypher and his fallen companions were able to escape their confinement in the dark cells after a squad of Dark Angels attempted a botched extraction to claim Cypher for themselves. In their attempt, the Dark Angels destroyed the generators which held the dark cells locked. While the custodians sought to contain the demonic breach and prevent prisoners from escaping, Cypher and the Fallen were able to break out and evade the Dark Angels, custodians, and assassins that were hunting them. The most sacred site in the Imperium became the theater of a shadow war between ostensibly loyalist forces. Cypher and his fallen contingent moved through this chaos with purpose. They fought when necessary, but avoided extended engagements. They made way towards the Golden Throne. A custodian guard of the Shadow Keepers, Hecaron, responsible for guarding the palace's darkest secrets, pursued Cypher to the throne's threshold. The Emperor's will manifested through Hecaron. The custodian had been mortally wounded earlier in the pursuit, but was restored for one final duty. He stood before Cypher and spoke two words. "Not yet." Hecaron died moments after delivering the Emperor's command. Cypher, who had fought his way across the palace and killed dozens to reach this moment, stopped. He did not draw the sword. He turned and withdrew, vanishing into the palace's lower levels with his companions, and by the time reinforcements arrived, he was gone. Whatever Cypher's mission, the time had not yet come. The Emperor's will, acting through a dying custodian, forced a delay. The implications are that if the Emperor commanded Cypher to withdraw, then Cypher acts with divine sanction. If the Master of Mankind stays the blades unsheathing, then the blade's purpose is known to him and judged necessary. 10,000 years after Caliban burned, the Lion returned. The Primarch emerged from stasis during the Arcs of Omen campaign, when Abaddon's corrupted space hulks threatened to shatter the Imperium's remaining strongholds. The chamber's existence had been unknown even to Supreme Grandmaster Azrael, hidden in depths of the rock that no living Dark Angel had walked. The Watchers, those silent Xeno's witnesses who had stood beside the Order in Caliban's final days, led the Primarch from his Tomb of Healing, where his fatal wounds slowly closed across 10 millennia of stasis. He awoke to an Imperium he did not recognize. The Lion did not announce himself to the Supreme Grand Master. He did not summon the Inner Circle to receive their oaths. He did not call a gathering of his Gene Sons to proclaim his return. Instead, he walked the rock's corridors alone, a ghost moving through the fortress monastery his legion had built from the shattered remnants of their homeworld, observing in silence what his sons had become during his long absence. He saw their efficiency, their discipline, their absolute commitment to the Emperor's vision. He saw also the elaborate architecture of lies they had constructed, the obsessive hunt that had transformed them from warriors into wardens of their own shame. Then he departed into the galaxy's darkness, taking with him several cowled figures. These Inner Circle companions, former fallen whom the Lion had judged and found faithful, answered to him alone. Their redemption was earned through action rather than agony. The Lion's approach to the fallen diverges from the methodology his sons have perfected across 10,000 years. Some fallen he has executed without ceremony or hesitation, appearing before them unannounced and delivering the Emperor's justice with the edge of fealty before they could speak a word in their defense. Others he has recruited, offering them a choice their gene brothers would never extend. Serve again, fight again, earn redemption through deeds, rather than be tormented in the Rock's dungeons. The Inner Circle watches their returned Primarch with the paralyzed uncertainty of men who have spent 10 millennia building a throne of secrets. They do not know if the Lion judges them worthy or damned. They do not know if their 10,000-year hunt represents the loyalty he demands or a failure of the vision he intended. They have defined themselves through the torture of captured fallen and the maintenance of an elaborate lie. But the Lion offers a different perspective. That some fallen can still serve. That redemption might be earned rather than extracted. That the First Legion's shame need not consume the First Legion's purpose. Perhaps most unsettling is his silence regarding Cypher. The Lion commanded the Dark Angels during the Heresy. He knew the warriors who stood beside Luther in Alderuk's final hours. If anyone in the Imperium can identify the figure beneath Cypher's hood, it is him. He understands the significance of the undrawn sword. He wielded the sword in his duel with Luther, felt it shatter in that final exchange. Yet he has made no pronouncement regarding the enigmatic fallen who has eluded the Unforgiven for 10,000 years. He has not ordered the Inner Circle to cease their pursuit. He has not revealed what he knows, if he knows, when he will act. This could mean the Lion agrees that Cypher must be stopped. Or it could mean the Lion recognizes that Cypher's mission, whatever that is, must be allowed to unfold without interference. If you're still listening, thank you. I sincerely hope that you enjoyed this video. I learned a ton while researching for this, and the Lion has quickly become one of my favorite Primarchs, along with a newfound appreciation for the Dark Angels. As always, I can't even begin to explain how much I appreciate your audience, and a special thank you goes out to my monthly supporters on Ko-fi. If you'd like to join my list of patrons, please check out the links in the description. If you did enjoy the video, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share your thoughts. Please also remember to check out the video sponsor by using the link and code below. Thanks again, and I wish you a good day or a good night.